on the board for the class of Nisringa Chaturdasi, which meant that it was not going to be spoken about. And then yesterday, and at my husband's request, the verse is still here today. So he warned me when I was to come downstairs, I would find the same verse was still on the board. And when during the Nisringa Chaturdasi class, I was looking at this verse and thinking, what an extraordinarily beautiful verse it is, actually, from the Bhagavatam. So somehow or other, it has been so compelled to stay with us for 3 days. So maybe, perhaps I was correct. So yeah. We will try. It's a little bit complicated in the Sanskrit, so we'll just try. Shri Rukmini Uvacha, Shutva Gunam Bhuvana Sundara Shrinvatam Te, Nivishya Karna Vivarer Harato Nigatapam, Rupam Drisham Drishamatam Akhilarta Labham. Twayachuta Vishati Chitam Apatrapam Me. Rukmini said, Shrutva, hearing. Gunam, the qualities. Bhuvana, of all the worlds. Sundara, of beauty. Shrinvatam, for those who hear. Te, your. Nirvishya, having entered. Karna, of the ears. Vivarai, by the orifices. Harata, removing. Anga, of their bodies. Tapam, the pain. Rupam, the beauty. Drisham, of the sense of sight. Drishimatam, of those who have eyes. Akila, total. Arta, of the fulfillment of desires. Labham, the mercy. Twayi, in you. Achuta, O infallible Krishna. Avishati, is entering. Chitam, mind. Patrapam, shameless. May, my. Translation. Shri Rukmini said in her letter, as read by the Brahmana, O beauty of the worlds, having heard of your qualities which enter the ears of those who hear and remove the bodily distress, and having also heard of your beauty which fulfills all the visual desires of those who see, I have fixed my shameless mind upon you, O Krishna. Please repeat. Shri Rukmini said in her letter as read by the Brahmana, O beauty of the worlds, having heard of your qualities which enter the ears of those who hear and remove all bodily distress, and having also heard of your beauty which fulfills all the visual desires of those who see, I have fixed my shameless mind upon you, O Krishna. Purport. Rukmini was a king's daughter, courageous and bold, and furthermore, she would rather die than lose Krishna. Considering all this, she wrote a frank, explicit letter begging Krishna to come and take her away. So the history here, of course, is that, as those who have been coming to the Bhagavatam classes, is that Rukmini, her family wanted that she should marry Krishna. They felt that Krishna was the only suitable person because she was so divinely beautiful and qualified. But her brother, he had a different plan. And he chose, of all people who he wanted his sister to be married to, he chose Sisupal. Now, for those of us who've read the Krishna book already or read ahead in the Bhagavatam, we will know that Sisupal is one of the
most envious
of Krishna. Most envious. And there's a reason why he's so intense in his inimicalness towards Krishna. What is that? Yes, Krishna killed Jarasandha, but just like with ourselves, perhaps you meet somebody and you either meet them somehow by chance, and as soon as you meet them you think, I really like that person. You don't know why you like them, you just met them. Or conversely, you might be in some situation, you meet somebody and you look at them once and think, I really don't like that person. I really don't like that person. And you might think to yourself, how can I have such strong feelings because I've never met them before? I just met them right now. But the question is, did you just meet them right now? And perhaps when we have very strong feelings in one life, we have met them previously. And there has been some exchange that has stayed somewhere in the inner core of our hearts. And now again, we're meeting that person. And we don't remember the incidents of a previous life, but we remember, I don't like that person. Well, Sisupal is like that. Not only in this life, Krishna has got in the way of his family and friends and so on and so forth, but previous lives as well. Because, factually speaking, in his last life, Krishna killed him. And in the previous life before that, he killed him in another form. Because Sisupal happens to be one of the two gatekeepers, Jaya and Vijaya, who came from the spiritual Vaikuntha realm to perform the pastime of acting as inimical, ready to fight with Krishna, combatants so that Krishna could enjoy the pleasure of fighting. So Sisupal, as we heard, was very, very, very envious of Krishna. And later in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, you'll hear about the Rajasuya sacrifice held by Maharaj Yudhisthira. And Maharaj Yudhisthira invited all the prominent dignitaries at that time to attend this sacrifice. It's considered the Raja Suya, the king of sacrifices. And at that sacrifice, one person is offered all the oblations and respect and honor. So many people come and perhaps they're not sure who is going to receive the honor as the most respected person present. And Yudhisthira Maharaj knew exactly what he was planning to do. So when everybody was present, he stood and he suggested that Krishna should be the person who all honor was given to. And Sisupal, remembering the atrocity that Krishna is about to perform at the request of Rukmini, of kidnapping Princess Rukmini right before, a day before the wedding, he remembers this and many other things that he dislikes intensely about Krishna, and he stands up and he starts again with his vitriolic words to criticize Krishna. He's this, he's this, he's that, he's that. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur takes all those words and in his own expert transcendental way, he turns them all around. The meaning, Sanskrit is a mystical language, he turns all those words around to show how actually Sisupal was glorifying Krishna by every word that he said. But his mood is one of anger. And then finally, he who is the most envious of Krishna, and everybody present was becoming, just imagine if somebody stood up and started disrespecting Srila Prabhupada in front of all of us and calling him every name, all the most abominable things, and pointing to him and shouting, we would all be so horrified. First we would try to pull him forcibly out of the temple room, and then we would wish to wash our ears, to just feeling that we have listened to the horrible things that he said. So this was how everybody felt. Some people left, They couldn't do anything. They were horrified at what was going on and they left. And those who were responsible felt like they were just about to kill themselves, having had this inauspicious activity take place of Sisyphus standing in the middle of the sacrifice, vilifying Krishna with every word he could utter. And Krishna waited very patiently, and when he had uttered his, he had a quota, and when he had done his quota of bad things to say, then very effortlessly Krishna lifted, this is Dwarka Krishna, Vasudeva Krishna, he lifted his hand like this, the Sudarshan Chakra appeared and he released it. And it flew straight like a razor blade, swirling razor blade, straight to Sisyphus, and he was finished. So this is just before this wedding is to take place, and you can just imagine how much anxiety Princess Rukmini is in, because this is the most envious person of Krishna, and her family have one view, and her brother, by his bad company, has chosen this arrangement. So she has found a suitable recipient of her secret letter. Imagine she's sending this letter to Krishna. What a shockingly bold thing to do. She's going to ask Krishna, can I marry you? And in the Vedic culture, this was not a traditional. There is a form of marriage like this, but it's very considered very rare. Generally speaking, the father, everything very respectable, would marry the daughter in a very appropriate way and so forth. But Rukmini doesn't know what else to do, so she's writing to Krishna. So in her letter, she says many things. This letter goes on to text 43. And she gives Krishna first, she glorifies Krishna, then very frankly she expresses why she has written this letter. And she tells him, if you think that I'm actually not suitable for you, I can understand you would think like that. I'm just an ordinary princess and you're the Supreme Lord, then that's all right. Then I will start practicing austerity. If I have not practiced any austerity to win your hand in the past, I will start now, and I will dedicate the whole rest of my life to austerity, because it is not possible to obtain you in one birth, so I will dedicate this birth and then millions to come. And that's all right. I will just continue in this way. But if you want to take advantage of this information, and it's being handed to you in this letter, she's very anxious, she said, then there is a system that you can take advantage of. Because I live in the inner palace, a princess would be in the very inside chambers, always protected, never seen by a man, very strict. Just like also later you'll hear about Usha. Usha was the daughter of Banasura, and she was living in the inner palace with so many girlfriends, she wasn't imprisoned, but no men would be able to see her, nor she would see any man. This is to keep the purity of the dynasty intact. So she was being very much protected. Her father was taking care like that. And one day she had a dream, and in that dream she saw a beautiful, wonderfully handsome young man, and he was enjoying her company. So when she woke up, she told this story to her friend, and her friend said, oh, what was he like? And she described him completely, and he sounded just like Krishna. And so her friend said, I've never seen such a person. I don't know where this imaginary dream has come from, but now I can't think of anyone else. And she became very unhappy and sad because she had seen this vision. So her friend was called Chitralekha because she could draw. Chitra means to draw. So she drew many pictures because they didn't have the internet and photos and Google. So she said, all right, I'll draw you some pictures and you tell me if I draw the picture, if this is the boy that you're looking for. So she started drawing pictures and Usha would say, no. And finally she drew Krishna, Dwarkadish Krishna, and Usha looked at it and said, no. And then she thought, all right. So then she drew the son of Krishna by Rukmini, Pradyumna, drew that picture. And then Usha became rather shy because this was the father of the person who she had seen. So she became a little shy and said, no, that's not him. And then she drew Aniruddha, the son of Pradyumna, grandson of Krishna. And when Usha saw that picture, she said, that's the person. So in this way, she was inside, in the inner chambers, and it was only by Trilaka's mystic power that she managed to actually fly to Dwarka by the mystic method and capture Aniruddha and bring him back. So there he was, in the inner chambers with Usha. But no man could go there. And when the ladies of the palace who were taking care of her recognized symptoms that Usha was not an innocent maiden anymore, then they went to the king, and of course they were in risk of their lives because somebody had come into these inner areas. So Rukmini knew that this would be a difficult way to kidnap her. But she had understood also that right before the wedding, the day before the marriage, there was a special parade festival that they did where they would take all the family and they would go, and she would probably go in a palanquin, all covered up and very chaste, and she would go to this demigoddess, which is their family deity, and they would all go there and they'd pray. And after then they would come back to the palace, and the next day the wedding would take place. So she said, if you want to capture me in this way and take me away, this would be the good time to do it. So Krishna now is just beginning to hear this letter. And as I said, this is quite a beautiful verse because it is glorifying Krishna's beauty. In terms of the ears, what happens if you hear about Krishna's beauty? It removes all your distress. And also in terms of the eyes, that if you see Krishna's beauty, it will satisfy and fulfill all the visual desires of those who have eyes. So in the Bhagavatam it describes that this is a world of names. And these names, because they're all relative, temporary things, this is a tree, this is a house, this is my son, this is a newspaper, this is a book, this is a bottle, this is a this, this is a this, this is this, this is this. The mind is captured by all these names and forms, and names and forms. And it goes from one name, one form, it hears the name and sees the form. And everyone's mind is caught up in this way, with the material nature. But you can see that, as is described also by Sukadeva Goswami, this only is like agitating the waves of the ocean, so a boat is going like this. Yesterday we were down walking by the beach here, and we saw somebody was coming, the wind was blowing and the waves were tossing, and somebody was coming in a boat, and the boat would go up with the wave and then down with the wave, and it would toss this way and up and down, backwards and forwards, side to side. And I was looking and thinking, just looking, I was feeling a little ill, dizzy because of the constant motion of water with the effects, the wind, the this, the that, is constantly, constantly in motion. So this is the nature of the material world. It is like a vast ocean, continuously in transition. So nothing ever can settle you. It's like if you see something on the horizon, you think, oh, I just wish I had such and such a thing, or such and such a situation. If this came about, then everything would work all right for me in my life. But as you go on this tossing ocean, you get to that place, you find that, oh, it's in the middle of the ocean. Even a small island is in the middle of the ocean. All around is ocean, more and more ocean. So you get to this island. For some time you can be happy on an island, but then you start looking out towards this place and that place, and again you're on this tossing ocean. And the island is so fragile that one big wave can wash away anything that's situated there. So everyone has their little worldly island in the middle of the ocean, but the waves are coming and going, and you cannot calm them down. So many therapies, you can see in the world today, have become extremely profitable, and people can make a large amount of money. They can do a university degree so we can make money from them learning the therapy. Then they can start their practice so that they can make money teaching the therapy. But why do they need all of this? Because people are so disturbed by the continuous changes and changes. So these are like attempts to make rafts. We can make some stability for you in your life. But your life is on this ocean. So all of the things of this world, we look at something, we want something, we hear about something, it agitates the mind to something else. There'll be another thought will follow that. I want this kind of career. Okay, now, where do I go to study? And how will I get some money? And where will I live? And what will I do? And on and on and on and on. And this is how the world is going on, just up and down, up and down, up and down. So the Bhagavatam talks about this world of names. And this world of names is where we are. So it's very difficult for us to separate ourselves internally from our identification with it all. And yet Krishna consciousness is meant to actually affect that transition. So the Prabhupada I was reading recently said that Krishna consciousness is meant to sever the connection with the body and the mind. So most of us, I would say, we're not quite ready to have our, our connection severed. We're quite attached to these as ourselves. We think this is us. But by hearing about Krishna, we get a subject matter that won't agitate the mind further to I want now this and then this and when I get that. It will actually pacify the mind, hearing about Krishna. Whether we hear about his pastimes or whether we hear about his glories, which means when we hear about him philosophically. And to begin with, our journey as beginning devotees is to hear about and recognize the miseries of the material world. And to use whatever we have, whatever abilities, whatever inclinations we have, to please Krishna in the material atmosphere, because this is what we're familiar with. This is what we feel part of. But by hearing about Krishna's pastimes, gradually, not overnight, not in a rush, one begins to sense that Krishna's real. And his place is real. And it's not that we can feel it so strongly that we wish to give up our location in this world and make that leap. But gradually, imperceptibly, that is what Srila Prabhupada is trying to do for us. To take us through this Krishna consciousness process till we reach a point where Krishna is so real and tangible to us that he's as tangible as anybody else in this room. And one wishes then to actually enter into, just like Rukmini, seeing him and hearing about him as the fulfillment of their life. But that's the thing that I want now. So Rukmini has written in her letter all of her feelings, and the Brahmana has come before Krishna. Opening the seal of the letter which Rukmini had given him, and she had written this in her own hand, in the privacy of her room. So a very, very personal letter she is writing. And the Brahmana, who she has chosen, has come to bring this to Krishna. He's opening the seal. He's going to hand this letter to Krishna to read. The Brahman showed this letter to Krishna as a token of Rukmini's love. On Krishna's request, the Brahman read that letter out loud. These are the statements of Sridhar Swami. So this is Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur filling in some information on this particular verse and the particular letter that she has written. So it's as if, says Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as if Krishna says to her, but how can I accept you, a king's daughter whom I have never seen or heard about, and who is so shamelessly writing a letter to me as her bridegroom with the intention of having me marry her? How can I accept such a person who's so bold? This is what she's anticipating, thinking Krishna might say this. And then she said, if Krishna says this, then Rukmini has an answer. She's thought this all through. Then Rukmini says, I will say, yes, it is true. You can say that. But I will express my feelings of heart. After you have heard this, you may accept me or neglect me, favor me or reject me. Nevertheless, depending on whether I obtain you or not, I will either live or happily forevermore. I will either live happily forevermore, or else I will die this very day or the next. She is very determined. For one in my condition, there is no question of shame or fear. So you can just imagine if somebody had a gun and they were pointing a gun at your head or heart, and you started to beg them, please, 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 don't do this. I will give you anything you want. And they might say, look, you're so shameless. You're just now speaking so many nice things. Before, you wouldn't give me anything. Now, look, just because I have a gun at your heart, you're ready to change your whole approach. So she's feeling so intensely, tomorrow she's going to be married. There's no question of shame. It's an emergency. So there she is, expressing herself boldly. Therefore, I now speak. Then Rukmini expressed herself in 7 verses. So these are the verses you will now hear in the next few days. Rukmini said in her letter, O Achyuta, hearing about your beauty and qualities, my mind has lost all shame. I have become completely attached to you. Your beauty and qualities are the 2 causes of my mind's becoming shameless. What are the 2 causes of her mind becoming shameless? Krishna's beauty and qualities. And my 2 ears are also its cause. So she had 2 ears to hear. So her ears and the words about his beauty and qualities, they're all to blame. She says, I'm not to blame, my ears are to blame, and your qualities are to blame. It's not my fault. Therefore, both you and I are at fault. I'm not the only one. You have this beauty and qualities, so you have given me difficulty. Therefore, you cannot criticize me, and I cannot criticize you. The suggestion of the word Achyuta, infallible Krishna, is, O Achyuta, my mind becoming shameless has approached you, but you are unmoved. Now I have no idea what you want to do, because he has not revealed anything yet. As she's imagining, because just you can think, if you were in a difficult situation and you were going to, even when you have to do something ordinary, like you have to apply for a job or something like that, you'd be thinking, but what if they look at my qualifications and they think, and if they say to me, why didn't you do such and such, then I can reply by telling them that that was because of such and such. And then you say, but then what if they say that we've got 20 people looking for this particular position, what will I say? Then I can say, and you think in your mind, here they may say and I'll say, in any situation this occurs, but when it's in relationship to Krishna, it's extremely sweet. So then Krishna may say, she's thinking, he might say, well, other men have attractive forms and good qualities, so why are you finding fault with them? If you think that I'm so great, you're finding a fault with them. Why are you finding a fault with them? So Rukmini's thinking, I would then say, please do not speak like this. Then she mentions Krishna's unique qualities. In other words, please do not compare yourself with an ordinary man. Having entered the ears of attentive young women, your wonderful qualities completely destroy all their pains, both subtle and gross. Please tell me, what other man exists who has qualities like you? So it's interesting, because as we know, we see everywhere, all over, especially in the city, billboards, we see everywhere in books, on television, on the radio, everywhere we see that the main subject matter of people today, their most attractive subject, is men and women together in some form or another. All their songs are like this. All their everything. Every movie must have some little scene in it, otherwise people will feel a little deprived. Just as in a standard Vedic meal, you'll have a sweet at the end. So if you just give half the meal, then you're waiting, you go and find a sweet. So similarly, this is what the whole world is moving on, this momentum. So why is the whole world moving on this momentum? Why is the whole world moving on this momentum? Who can say?
Radha Krishna.
What does that mean?
Is there the supreme couple?
Radha and Krishna, the supreme couple. Yes, continue.
So we try to imitate that.
We try to imitate that. And this is compared in the Bhagavad Gita to a tree, right? There's a tree. And the tree is standing on the bank of a lake or a river. So the tree goes up this way and it goes down that way. It goes into the water. And so sometimes I've taken a photograph. I remember one time in Mayapur I took a photograph at Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's samadhi of the trees on the side of the pond there. And I couldn't tell which was up and which was down because the water was so clear and still that you could have held it this way, you could hold it that way. The tree was identical. But you see two tops, right? One in the water, so it goes from there down to there. Top and top. So because it is the top, so it's also the bottom. And because when people move further and further away from the top in the spiritual world, they move further and further towards the top, the bottom, you could say, or the top in the material world. So they go down, 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 until they come to the very same point. So this is why there's a great fascination for male, female, and every year, every generation, it becomes more loose, more available, more degraded, as the forgetfulness of the top becomes thicker and thicker and thicker, the influence of the bottom becomes stronger and stronger. So Srila Prabhupada in 1970 he introduced his Krishna book, before even the Srimad Bhagavatam. He didn't actually have any Srimad Bhagavatam translated then, only the books that he came with from America. And he immediately took up the task of translating the Krishna book and gave this to all the devotees when I was in Los Angeles at that time. And he arranged that every devotee in the temple received a copy of the book and immediately began to have classes to hear about Krishna. And for me, the first time hearing from the Krishna book was very strange, extremely strange, because I was newly there, and so I was completely accustomed to the worldly taste and completely unaccustomed to hearing anything to do with Krishna or the spiritual world. But I did notice the pictures, and I saw, oh look, here he is with a girl. Well, that makes sense. This is what everybody else is doing. So then, of course, in the introduction, Srila Prabhupada is explaining this. When you see the girl before with Krishna, who is this girl? So many times when you speak to somebody, you try to explain Radha and Krishna and you realize that you have many concepts to put in place before you can speak. They have to learn. So many different elements have to be there. Just like before you can read this book, you have to know the whole alphabet. I tried to learn one time in India, many times in India, Hindi, but there was some of the alphabet I couldn't learn because it was unfamiliar to me. So I would know three quarters of the alphabet. And sure enough, every time you would read a sign, you would get three quarters of the way through the sign, and one or two of the characters would make it difficult to complete the task of reading. So similarly, when you go from a material conception of male and female and you enter into coming towards the conception of pure transcendental male and female, many things have to be put in place first in order to make that achievable. But here, we're hearing about Rukmini in a very open way, where she's writing her letter, she's approaching Krishna and she's asking him, please come as soon as possible and kidnap me. Take me out of this situation, a very undesirable situation, and accept me as yours. And in it would sound very arrogant, but of course beautiful worldly women are always very arrogant. But it is not her arrogance, but she's saying to Krishna, if something is meant for the lion, it's something very beautiful, it's meant for a king, how can it be given to a jackal? So she was referring to herself, my beauty is meant for you, it's not meant for this person. So this is how we should also feel. My good qualities, whatever they may be, are meant for you. They're not meant for worldly exposure. I want to please you with whatever you have kindly given to me. And in this way, on our own level, in our own situation, we can also adopt the same mood that Princess Rukmini is adopting here in her approach to Krishna. I'll read this verse again. O beauty of the worlds, having heard of your qualities which enter the ears of those who hear and remove their bodily distress, and having also heard of your beauty which fulfills all the visual desires of those who see, I have fixed my shameless mind upon you, O Krishna. All right, thank you. Are there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
When people hear of Krishna, sometimes people are attracted, but they're embarrassed by that. They feel ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And others hear of Krishna, they, you know, they're attracted, they get over that embarrassment. The other day I was talking to my father, and just a couple of days ago, he was reminding me when I brought him to the temple. And he said, when he was driving home that night, he just kept chanting Hare Krishna. And he said for 2 weeks he couldn't get it out of his head. And that was really worried. So that he avoids coming to the temple.
To have that happen to him again.
Because he couldn't stop chanting. Yeah. He was attracted, but it was embarrassing.
Yes. It's interesting. Sorry.
Yeah, so just why, yeah, can you comment on that? Different people react in different ways.
Well, sometimes it's said that shame or lajja, what does lajja mean?
Shame.
Shyness also. So lajja is considered a good quality in a woman, that she's very shy. And Srila Prabhupada sometimes uses an example of how he and another gentleman friend of his were standing in the street talking. And there was a lady who was a street sweeper, which is a very low caste. And she wanted to enter the building. They were standing outside the building talking. And she had her head covered, and she was trying to figure out how to move around and go into the building without disturbing these men, not to go near the men, just to go and quietly do her. And he commented about this shyness quality, and he said how shyness is such a good quality in a woman. And he would always glorify this. It was very often he would speak of this shyness for a woman and how a woman should be control everything by her shyness, so that she becomes like she protects the men by being very, very shy. So lajja or shyness in Srila Prabhupada's speaking became a quality that was admirable. And then somewhere, I cannot remember the exact quote, but I heard that lajja was one of the disqualifications for one who wants to approach Krishna. And it struck me that Srila Prabhupada had been glorifying this shyness. But in a relationship to Krishna, shyness is not a good quality. Because, and here's an example, that somebody comes in touch with Krishna and Krishna reaches out and touches them and they start to chant. And then they feel very uncomfortable with this and they don't want to continue to come near him again. Mm-hmm. So in many cases you will read there in the newspaper, even not newspaper but magazines, they'll give articles on how to control shyness, how you should be very brave, you shouldn't be shy, because they have their own motives for and shallowly thinking presentations. But in spiritual sense, with Krishna, we should not be shy. It isn't a good quality. Because Krishna is all attractive. So he's trying. He's trying his best to reach out. And I was thinking when you were saying about your father chanting all the time, how the fisherman, when Lord Chaitanya ended up in his net and he touched him, he also was chanting all the time and he thought that he had somehow or other been possessed. He was looking instead, looking for somebody to help him with his good fortune. He was looking for somebody to get this ghost out of him. So what is good in the material? Here's our tree again, up, and the tree down. So in the down tree, shyness is very good, very important. But when we're approaching the up tree, the real tree, the tree of relating to Krishna, then shyness is not recommended. So that's a fact. Shyness is something that often prohibits people. And then you find sometimes that somebody will say, I did such and such, and then 10 years later, I did such and such. And this gap, this reservation with Krishna can slow us down in our advancement in devotional life. I bet that leaves some questions in some people's minds. Does anyone? Yeah.
Okay. Because she is a princess, she knows the politics of the boy kingdom and lots of things.
Yes.
So she won't be so shy because.
No. And we'll see this later, she's not actually shy.
Yeah.
She's presenting herself like that because it's a good quality to pretend to be shy for a young lady. You'll hear in the Srimad Bhagavatam, any time you see, you'll read something about some beautiful young girl and some very powerful, handsome king, and he's becoming smitten by her charms, she'll always be trying to cover herself up. She'll be pulling her sari over her face and giggling and things like this, playing ball at the same time, pulling her sari to show it high. And this becomes very bewildering to the person involved. The great king will lose all of his position of detachment, seeing this shyness. So she's acting like that in this case because she's a Kshatriya girl, she's a princess. So I think Srila Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur tells us that when Krishna did come and took her away, she was holding the reins of the chariot. So she was driving. She was the driving force here. So she's shy, but she's a relative conception. So yes, these are the embellishments of these pastimes, to hear about the different personalities in Krishna's pastimes. And what it does is it takes for a moment, at least for a second, it lifts our mind away from this world. And so that's a very beneficial transformation. So this is why we're asked by Srila Prabhupada to please hear about Krishna's pastimes, to please let your ears open, the orifices of your ears, so that the sound vibration may enter. Yes.
The other thing comes to my mind, because she's so beautiful, she has got prerogative to find the best man.
She's got to find the best man. Because she's so exquisitely beautiful.
Yes.
We see in the Srimad Bhagavatam when Rama Devi, which is Lakshmi Devi, is asked to find a husband. And she looks amongst all the men and says, there's nobody here who's suitable. Maybe somebody has got these qualities, but they have that quality. And this one has this, but they have anger. Maybe they control their anger, but they have this, but they have that. So there's nobody, anyone who would accept as a husband, a man who was wearing a body made of flesh and blood, and mucus and bile, is a fool. She says, I cannot accept anyone like that, because she is the consort of Narayan, so she is incompatible with any man. So similarly we hear like this, a princess has to be appropriately married. It's a difficult thing. It's when you have a highly qualified person, they have to marry a highly qualified person. There's similarly a story of Maharaj Prataparudra, who was the king at the time of Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath Puri, that his father was one king from South India had come to see about marrying his daughter to his father, who later became his mother. And he was sweeping the street in front of the Rath cart before Rath Yatra, and so the king became offended and thought, I'm not marrying my daughter to a person who does such a menial task as this. She's a princess. So he left. So the king, with a kingly valor, he fought. He retaliated by fighting, and he captured the princess and defeated the king and brought the princess back to Jagannath Puri, and then told his minister, you take this girl and marry her to a street sweeper in retaliation because of his powerful kingly anger. So marry her to a street sweeper. And so the ministers were in difficulty, so they went looking all throughout Jagannath Puri, all the street sweepers. And of course there was no one of that class who could marry a princess. So the princess was getting more and more worried, what's going to happen with me? And then they waited for some time. And next year, when the Rath Yatra cart was taking, before the Rath Yatra, when the king was sweeping, they said, we will marry this princess to this street sweeper. And so she became the queen. Princess is allowed to choose somebody very perfect. Yes.
One more story comes to my mind. Jalasan was looking for a bride for the two daughters. And he was waiting for a very long time till Banasura approached. And when Banasura proposed that Kansa was the only suitable person, then very difficult for Jarasandha to be convinced. But once he was convinced, then he did everything to marry both the daughters.
Both of them to the same person. It's a great responsibility in the Vedic culture to find a suitable person to take care of your daughter, because she's like a treasure. You've raised her so nicely and now you have to give her to somebody. This was the culture. Of course, modern culture has shifted radically from this approach. But Srila Prabhupada would tell us about these things. That's the only reason we know. We cannot see them today so easily. All right, thank you. Yes, one last question.
Your Grace, you mentioned in your talk, you made the point that the Krishna book,
yes,
was written before Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's considered very important. Why is it considered very important, that particular book?
Because Srila Prabhupada didn't know how long he was going to live. If you think for a moment, he had had heart attacks on the boat coming over. So although he's transcendental and he's placed himself fully in Krishna's hands, he didn't know how long Krishna was going to keep him in this world. So he was always in a state of emergency. And many times it comes out in his speaking that, you know, I am an old man, I could die at any minute. He wanted urgently to give his Krishna conscious mission to the hands of his disciples, that they should take charge of this so that he would know that it had been established in the short time that he felt that he had left. So thinking that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam, as we were hearing Narada speaking to Vyas, Vyas had written so many books, but he was dissatisfied, and Narada told him, now you delineate the glories of Krishna, supreme son of Devaki. This is the main purpose of writing the Bhagavatam. In fact, it's the only purpose of writing the Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is written very scientifically for a serious student. So they can, as I'm saying, to go from the material idea of boys and girls and love and happiness and family life in the material world, to the position of being a lover of Krishna, is a vast step. So to do that, it has to be done step by step. It's a vast journey. So the Bhagavatam has been written to take us through those concepts systematically until we come to the point of hearing about Krishna. And if we have read the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada has said this, if you've read it carefully, when you come to the point of hearing about Krishna, you'll immediately surrender to Krishna. So we are not so qualified that we can have that experience in that way. We just do the best we can. You know, we read a bit here, a bit there, and try our best, or maybe we're somebody's more scholarly than that, but it's not that we're going to necessarily have that whole experience instantaneously. But that's how the Bhagavatam has been written, to bring one to the 10th canto, which is the largest section, where from beginning to end of Krishna's lila, it's all described there. So thinking that I may not get through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, Srila Prabhupada thought, let me go to 10, summarize it, and purport it, but in a story form. Not put verse, purport, but just put blend in the purport and everything else into the story. So his Krishna book follows the verses of the 10th canto, but incorporated in there is many instructions of Srila Prabhupada's giving for somebody who's right at the beginning, because he's this is 1970. So he has no really senior disciples, and no one from India has come into his mission yet. So he's talking to brand new hippie, ex-hippie, drug-addicted young people. So he's presenting this 10th canto for them, for an audience like that, and of course for the whole world to come. But this is the context in which he's writing it. Later, we get the 10th canto, which has been systematically presented in the same way as the rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But he did not live in this world to stay with us long enough to do the whole 10th canto. So therefore, we have his Krishna book, which is the whole 10th canto in that form, in that simple form. So therefore, this is the importance. of the 10th canto. Now there's so many books, there's books on books and books on books and books and books and books. But this was the original one. So therefore it's greatly significant in that regard for the benefit of anyone who wants to know about Krishna. And numerous people have told me the first book they found was Krishna book. They couldn't understand it, but it was the first thing that they read and they wanted to find out more about it. And so they've come into a fold of Krishna consciousness through the Krishna book. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Go Premanandi. Hari Hari.